As we come to the table, we are turning to Ecclesiastes 10, just continuing with our series. So Ecclesiastes chapter 10, and we're beginning to read from verse 1. This is God's word. Dead flies make the perfumer's ointment give off a stench. So a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. A wise man's heart inclines him to the right, but a fool's heart to the left. Even when the fool walks on the road, he lacks sense, and he says to everyone that he is a fool. If the anger of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your place, for calmness will lay great offences to rest. There's an evil that I have seen under the sun, as it were, an error proceeding from the ruler. Folly is set in many high places, and the rich sit in a low place. I have seen slaves on horses and princes walking on the ground like slaves. He who digs a pit will fall into it, and a serpent will bite him who breaks through a wall. He who quarries stones is hurt by them, and he who splits logs is endangered by them. If the iron is blunt and one does not sharpen the edge, he must use more strength. But wisdom helps one to succeed. If the serpent bites before it is charmed, there is no advantage to the charmer. The words of a wise man's mouth win him favor, but the lips of a fool consume him. The beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness, and the end of his talk is evil madness. A fool multiplies words, though no man knows what is to be, and who can tell him what will be after him? The toil of a fool wearies him, for he does not know the way to the city. Woe to you, O land, when your king is a child, and your princes feast in the morning. Happy are you, O land, when your king is the son of the nobility, and your princes feast at the proper time, for strength and not for drunkenness. Through sloth the roof sinks in, and through indolence the house leaks. Bread is made for laughter, and wine gladdens life, and money answers everything. Even in your thoughts, do not curse the king, nor in your bedroom curse the rich. For a bird of the air will carry your voice, or some winged creature tell the matter. In chapter 10, we are continuing really with the theme of wisdom and folly. It's more difficult to get a clear structure here in this chapter. It works more like Proverbs, where we get kind of bites of wisdom for different areas of life. There's a warning that comes at the beginning in verse 1. Dead flies make the perfumer's ointment give off a stench, so a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. A beautiful smelling bottle of perfume can be ruined with just a few dead flies. Soon the sweetness of the perfume will be overcome with the stench of the dead flies. And wisdom and folly work like that. A lot of wisdom can be quickly overcome by a little folly. Perhaps we could think of leaders who seem to have had so much positive impact. They have displayed and given so much wisdom, but then one silly decision, one poor immoral choice, and that seems to outweigh the wisdom. It takes much less to ruin something than it does to create it or gain it back. And in verse 2, the preacher says, he says there's a wise way to live and there is a foolish way to live. He says, a wise man's heart inclines him to the right, but a fool's heart to the left. Or a wise man's heart leads him aright, a fool's heart leads him astray. See, the direction of our hearts determine the direction of our lives. Psalm 14 says, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. See, the fool is the one living without recognition of who God is. It is primarily living to please himself. And as we saw back in chapter 4, that is meaningless. And so his life goes to the left. His life goes in the wrong direction. But the wise man is fearing God. The wise man is living in recognition of who God is. And so his life goes to the right. His life is moving in the correct direction. And so the first question we all need to ask, is my life moving in the right direction? The preacher then gives us a description of the fool in verse 3. It says, even when the fool walks on the road, he lacks sense, and he says to everyone that he is a fool. The fool cannot disguise himself. It's obvious to everyone but himself that he is a fool. In Proverbs 12, we read, the heart of a fool proclaims folly. And again, the way of the fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man listens to advice. One commentator defines folly here as guilty of hot anger, self-centeredness, and hatred of discipline and wisdom. See, the fool thinks only of himself, and he thinks that he alone knows what is best for himself. The fool won't ask for advice, and the fool won't take advice well when it is given, but will be very quick to make his view known to others. And often when the fool is given advice, he will respond with anger and will be all the more determined to do his own thing and make sure everyone knows it. Maybe obvious, blatantly obvious, to friends and family that he's about to make a poor decision, but no, he alone knows that he is right. So we get a picture of the fool, and then we see how his foolishness is played out in certain settings. And there are three that I just very briefly want to look at this evening from this passage. The first we see in verses 4 to 7 and also verses 16 to 17. And we see folly in leadership. Verse 5, there's a folly that I have seen under the sun, as it were an error proceeding from the ruler. There are those in leadership that should not have been appointed to that position because they lack wisdom. Probably they're in the position for self-serving agenda, for what they can get out of it. Like the king there in verse 16, who is immature, he's putting more emphasis on partying and having fun rather than focusing on the responsibility that has been given to him. And this is in contrast to the king in verse 17, who's able to prioritize, who feasts at the right time to gain strength for his work, rather than simply self-indulgence. And foolish leadership will bring a curse, verse 16, whereas wise leadership will bring a blessing, verse 17. And we see the effects of foolish leadership in verses 6 and 7. When folly is set in high places, slaves are on horses, and princes are walking on the ground like slaves. In other words, everything is upside down. Society is not working properly as it should. See, when the wrong people are put in the wrong positions, this filters down and everyone is affected. I dare not mention our own government or lack of it. And we should take seriously the responsibility to vote those into positions of leadership. We should consider this carefully. We should read. We should find out about people and pray that God would give us godly leaders who would lead with wisdom. And once people are placed in positions of authority, We should continue, as Paul says, to pray for kings and all who are in high positions, that we may lead a peaceful and quiet life, godly and dignified in every way. But we know that under the Lord's control, there are those who come into positions of leadership who are not godly and do not rule with wisdom. And sometimes we are directly affected by this, perhaps most by those in authority in the workplace. Verse 4 there says, if the anger of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your place, for calmness will lay great offences to rest. So how do you respond? How do you respond when leadership is not godly and perhaps that's being aimed at you? Well, do not leave your place. Don't throw your head up and say, well, that's it, I've had enough, I'm getting out of here. Don't respond to anger with anger. Don't respond to folly with folly. Don't bite off your nose to spite your face. Don't go huffing. This may seem exactly the right thing to do in the moment. You may feel great or even powerful for taking your stand or for even acting on principle, but be careful you're acting from wisdom rather than hurt or pride. It never looks as impressive or as mature as you may think. And often after you have reacted in that way, well, then you suddenly realize. And often then, due to embarrassment or perhaps further pride, you can't return to the position you once had, and you've lost your opportunity to work or perhaps minister or be useful where you once were. So how should we respond then? With calmness, for that will lay great offences to rest. Don't respond with haste. This will allow you to think rationally, and it will allow the other person to think rationally. This is not just a wise thing to do, but it's our duty as Christians. 1 Peter 2, servants, be subject to your masters with all respect, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the unjust. For this is a gracious thing. When mindful of God, one endures sorrows while suffering unjustly. For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example so that you might follow in his steps. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. To act with wisdom, we look to Christ as our example. Secondly, then, we see folly in work. That's verses 8 to 11 and also verses 15 and 18. And there's a few more sayings here to make a point. He who digs a pit will fall into it. And of course, now this could happen accidentally to anyone. The Psalms refer to this. Psalm 7 says, he makes a pit, digging it out, and falls into the hole that he has made. Also Psalm 9, the nations have sunk in the pit that they have made, in the net that they hid, their own foot has been caught. And it seems the point here is that there is often consequences to folly, and often we have no one to blame but ourselves for those consequences. A serpent will bite him who breaks through a wall. He who quarries stones is hurt by them, and he who splits logs is endangered by them. Verse 10 makes the point most obvious. If the iron is blunt and one does not sharpen the edge, he must use more strength. Verse 15, the toil of a fool wearies him, for he does not know the way to the city. This person makes things needlessly difficult for themselves because of their folly, because of their failure to prepare, to plan, to weigh up the risks. See, a slapdash, lazy attitude will get us nowhere, verse 18. Through sloth, the roof sinks in, and through indolence, the house leaks. In education, in your work, in ministry, perhaps you're someone who just wants everything done yesterday. But be patient. Allow yourself time to prepare, to plan, to weigh up potential risks, and recognize when you need the help of others. And do this now. Take action before your folly comes back to bite you, verse 11. Don't neglect something that could easily be prevented with the risk of causing unrepairable damage. Thirdly, then, and finally, we see folly in speech, verses 12 to 14, and also verse 20. The words of a wise man's mouth win him favor, or are gracious, but the lips of a fool consume him. They do him no good. See, the fool's thinking and speaking does not begin with God. The one who is foolish with his words says far too much and talks far too much about things he knows nothing about. He'll have an answer for everything. He will be too opinionated and will speak far too arrogantly about the future. Perhaps in contrast, the one who is wise will say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that, James 4. In verse 20, we see the fool loves to criticize those in authority, and this also is linked into our response to those in authority. Don't be too quick to criticize or speak badly of those in authority, even if you think it's in a safe place. Once you say something, you've lost control of your words and you can't take them back. What you say could reach the wrong person and could have consequences. A little birdie might just take that information to the wrong person, verse 20. And excuse the pun, but be careful what you tweet and put on social media. Again, once you post, you've lost control and you never know the consequences. So we can see advantages and disadvantages of living wisely or living foolishly, of living in recognition of who God is or rejecting who God is. We began with a warning. But Jesus speaks of a much greater warning than merely consequences now. Jesus says that our actions and our words are actually a reflection of our hearts. And he says in Matthew 12, I tell you, on the day of judgment, people will give an account for every careless word they speak. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. You see, our words and actions as a reflection of our hearts really tell us whether or not we will be saved or condemned by God, whether we will be on the right or the left at God's judgment. So I ask again, which direction are you going? See, when Jesus died, which we are going to remember just now, there was a notice above his head which read, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." But these words were written in mockery. The world laughed. They thought it was just so foolish. You see, the word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. See, Jesus Christ is our wisdom from God. He is our righteousness. He is our sanctification. He is our redemption. And he is our only hope of salvation, 1 Corinthians 1. Jesus is the righteous King who took the curse for all our unrighteousness, freeing us from the curse. And now as we meet around this table again, and we acknowledge that the folly of the cross is in fact wisdom, and we recognize Jesus as King and come under his authority, when you see what filters down, we enjoy the eternal blessings of life and joy and peace in his kingdom, and we respond to his authority with thankfulness.